Moving Iron Podcast is proud to be part of the Global Ag Network. The network is live, so check out globalagnetwork.com for more details and updates. Now on to the show.
Moving Iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving Iron, time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving Iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast number 138. Today my guest is George Burkaugh of Burkaugh Insurance Group, and I got George on here because I know enough about crop insurance to know that I don't know anything. So I wanted to get George on to talk about this stuff, and we've got a lot of stuff going on right now in the marketplace that has to do with prevent plant, and I think there's a lot of confusion out there of what that is and how that affects everything. So George, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure, man. So kind of like I told you earlier when we got started, I said I know about as much about crop insurance as I do nuclear fission. So, neither one I know much about. So this is going to be as much education for me as it is anybody else listening to this program. So before we get started, though, George, I want to give a little background on yourself and how long you've been in the crop insurance business.
I'm located over in southern Indiana. I operate, clients in four states, Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, and Illinois. So I cover a good portion of the Eastern Corn Belt. Most of the growers I'm fortunate to work with are pretty progressive, so they're pretty good-sized growers. And they understand the need for crop insurance and marketing to work together. I think that's the big unknown of crop insurance. I think folks think you need to have it to keep your banker happy, which you do. But I think the bigger key to this is that crop insurance is a tool, just like your grain bins are a tool, so that you can utilize the insurance to help you market better, especially where a lot of guys are waiting until harvest to let the market take it where they will. Crop insurance allows you to go ahead and forward contract grain and even before harvest is it.
Okay. So I know it's there's several dates that are important in this crop insurance discussion that we have, especially when it comes to corn. Every crop has a date that is out there right now that is going to have an effect on whether it's insurable or not. So we've hit some of those time frames here with corn because of the rain situation and different things that are happening out there. But you know, prevent plant now is dominating the landscape when we start talking about what we see in the news and what we hear from everyone around us. So I think that's probably the best place to start in this conversation that we're having today is what is prevent plant and what does that mean and how does it work?
So by definition, prevent planting is the failure to plant an insured crop with proper equipment by the final planting date or during the late plant period. So you hit on the final plant dates that have either passed or are approaching. So you've got a bulk of the Western Corn Belt. So I'm talking Nebraska, South Dakota, North Dakota, Northern Minnesota. Their final plant date is May 25th for corn. You've got May 31st. That'll hit the rest of Minnesota, a good portion of Wisconsin and Iowa, as well as Kentucky and parts of Missouri. So at that point, and then the remaining dates, that's June 5th for Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, and Ohio. So what happens at the final plant date? That doesn't mean you can't plant anything after that because that on the final plant date. So let's take, we'll talk Eastern Corn Belt terms here, June 5th, for a lot of my clients. So when June 5th occurs, they've got really two choices at that point. They can go into the clients can say, hey, I'm done planning. The weather forecast is bad for the foreseeable future, and I can't get anything in the ground even if I wanted to. So at that point, they can file a prevent plant claim. You have 72 hours after your final plant date to file that claim. So my suggestion to anybody that's listening would be to go ahead and even if they expect to continue planting after that final plant date, to go ahead and file that claim on all potential acres. And then as they continue to plant and the adjuster comes to visit, and they can then withdraw acres, any acres that have been planted. So at that point, after the final plant date, they can take prevent plant and not have to do another thing, or they can go forward and continue to plant into the late plant period. The, downfall of planting in the late plant period is that it goes on for 25 days after your final plant date, and then for every day that you're in that late planting period, you lose 1% of your coverage per day. So in the case of if you're a grower that has 85% coverage, and June 5th it is the final plant date, and you decide to plant on June 10th, then you're already down from 85% to 80% coverage. So and that continues all the way until you get to in this case, the 25 days of the late plant period, in which then you get down to 50% coverage. So that's as low as you're going to get.
Okay.
So, and then of course, beans have a different final plant date, and we have not approached that yet. And in our case of the Eastern Corn Belt, that date would be June 20th. And it's a little earlier for the other areas. So I think you're talking June 10th, June 15th, and then, like I said, June 20th, for my area.
Gotcha. Okay. So, but that's not that far away, right? The 10th to 15th, that's 2-3 weeks away. And,
not at all.
Okay. So here, like you said, okay, we're 2 weeks away. We're kind of working our way into these kind of drop dead dates, I guess, for lack of a better term, as a crop insurance agent, and you're talking to your clients and you're talking to people that you work with. When do you start making that decision? I mean, right now, the way things are right now with the technology and planters and so on and so forth, they can plan a lot of stuff pretty quick if it gets dried up. But to your point earlier, where you lose the 1% a day thing, if you buy 85% coverage with your for insurance, and then you lose 5%, I guess how does that work, and what does that look like, and how does those conversations start being had? I mean, where does that, I guess, in your professional opinion, when do those kind of X and Y axis start to cross, and it starts to make sense to look at maybe planting some late stuff?
So I guess a couple of things about prevent plant. Corn, the payment would be 55% of your guarantee. So that would be, if you took 85% coverage, that would be 85% times your APH, actual production history for the crop. And so then it would be times $4, which is the spring price. And for prevent plant, the spring price is all we can use, whereas on your regular multi-peril coverage, you can use either the spring price or the harvest price, whichever is higher. So in this case, let's just look at a situation where your APH is 200 bushels an acre. So it'd be 200 times $4 times the 85% coverage. So your revenue guarantee would be $680 per acre. But your prevent plant payment would be at 680 times 55%, or $374 an acre. Now, there's a buy up on corn and give you an extra 5%. So if your policy has a PF on it, and your agent was forward thinking enough to do that, that would go up to a 60% prevent plant payment as opposed to a 55%. And then if you decide that, I want to plant beans, following that first crop that prevented crop, if you have that double crop eligibility, then that will take that payment down from 55% to 35%. So then you would have to insure that second crop, that bean crop as well. That also reduces the premium on your first on that corn insurance payment down to 35% of that premium as well. So there's, you lose a little bit on that side, but then you have the eligibility to plant beans. As far as looking at calculations, and that's what I've been doing for probably the past 2 weeks, is running calculations for my clients on what prevent plant payments look like, what it would look like if they came back in with a second crop behind it, and what kind of agronomic sense does it make to plant later into maybe that late plant period. As corn has continued to climb, we're talking about that 450 mark right now, and it could close at 452 today. So as we get into that 450 mark, it makes it a lot more palatable to plant in that late plant period. We are talking about a potential maybe 10 million acres of acres that will be prevented from planting. Quite a few, and again, as we come up to these drop dead dates, there are quite a few acres that are still left to be planted. So I think that will have, more play in the market and in enticing growers to continue to plant into that late plant period. A lot of times, again, from an agronomic standpoint, for my area, that June 10th timeframe is where it starts to get, a little fuzzy about making sense. There are a couple of good sites that have extensive calculators. I know the Farm Doc Daily site over at University of Illinois, the Extension has a good calculator. So does the Extension at Iowa State. I think that address is extension.iastate.edu. And then more recently, Purdue Extension put out a webinar, I think it was on May 23rd, that goes over not only the crop insurance considerations, but the agronomic management considerations of prevent plant as well. So those are three good sites that will help give you some additional information about making good decisions based on dollars and cents.
Wow. Okay. So let's talk about, if you don't have the opportunity to even go back and double crop beans or something like that back into that, those corn acres because of it being wet or whatever that stopped you from doing that. Let's just talk about the places where there's 2 feet of water standing in the fields. I mean, how does that work? How does that prevent, obviously there's a prevent plant scenario there, but you don't even have a chance to go plant anything else. So how does that work?
So then you would take that 55% payment that we talked about on the corn. So it would work off off your APH or that history for that particular unit or section, and then what you would need to do is essentially have documentation that you intended to plant corn on those acres. And so documentation would be seed receipts, fertilizer receipts. And then of course your previous history as well. And you would need to also report those prevented acres to your FSA office. And I've had some experience in the past, where, it's prevent planting is supposed to be, similar to, activities in the county. So, typically you couldn't be the only, producer that claimed prevent plant in an area. That's where that documentation comes in handy. I know that that there are areas that have several acres that are underwater, but there are also some areas that you may be the largest grower in that county and you can't get all your acres planted. Well, that's where the meeting minutes from those county committee meetings that go on FSA come in handy, because again, you may be have the largest amount of acres, you just couldn't get to them because, well, it was just too wet, and that those county committee meeting minutes will go forward into helping plead your case on prevent planning, because it's not a given. There are still ways that you can fall out of eligibility for prevent plan. The first one being that in the last 4 years, what's your highest number of acres planted? That's the number one key. And if you go out and try to pick up additional acres because you think, hey, this prevent planting stuff sounds like it's a piece of cake, then that may not be the case if you go over your eligible acres. And then the second would be proving that you had enough seed, enough fertilizer out there to plant those intended acres. And then as you move forward, if you decide to put in a cover crop, you can't hay or graze that cover crop until November 1st. So if there's any proof that you did beforehand, didn't you either planted another crop that wasn't insured and harvested that, or harvested a hay crop or grazed that prevent plan acres before November 1st, then you could void your prevent payment. Hey, tremendous amount of rules. So my suggestion for the folks listening would be to contact their crop insurance agent, especially, again, as you get to your final plant date, because you only have that 72-hour window in which to report those prevent plant acres.
Yeah. Okay. So prevent plant, I think you said there's 10 million acres. I've heard 7 million. I've heard, 11 million. I've heard all just large number of acres that are going to not get planted this year. Which also, and then we've got the tariff thing going on and everything else that's there. So, but there's a tariff payment that's coming out too. So how does that work with crop insurance and this prevent plan thing?
So the tariff payment is, the rules are still pretty vague because they haven't been, I guess their full details haven't been released yet. However, I note that there's a Farm Progress on their website. They have an interactive map that estimates these MSP per county, so you can get an idea on what that looks like. And I think these payments are done by crop. So what we're looking at as an average is somewhere on $47 per acre nationally. But if you're in areas that are heavy corn, those payments end up lowering a bit to somewhere around like $25 an acre. And of course, there's a limit on those payments of $125,000 per entity. And those come in three payments. I think the first one is supposed to occur somewhere around the end of July or early August, based upon the acreage reporting that goes on to with those FSA offices. Then the next payments are supposed to be in that November window, and then in January 2020. Now, the conditions of those payments being out there will be if we still have a tariff situation in place. So it's likely that we can have something resolved by the end of the year. So maybe you get that July payment, but you don't end up getting maybe the November or January payment, or maybe you get the July and November payment, but not the January payment. With that said, I would not base decisions with thought that you're going to get some sort of payment, because these in the past have been based on planted acres and based on bushels. And so with any kind of prevent plant that's out there, it would be unlikely that you would see a payment. Now, there's some discussions within the Senate right now about flooded acres. And so those acres in Iowa and Nebraska that were impacted by the heavy flooding earlier in the spring, and payments, disaster payments based on that. And so it's still unclear at the moment whether or not those those types of payments would move forward to other areas other than that that heavy Midwest area that was hit. But those kind of payments would take into place both, I guess, your planted acres and your prevent acres. But it's still unclear, and that stuff's still up in the air, and it seems likely to get caught up in the House, whether or not, with all the politics going on, whether or not those payments will get pushed forward, those disaster payments, as we see them now.
Yeah, that's been a big deal there. It just seems like there's more just stonewalling than there's anything going on right now when it comes to politics. I guess it's kind of getting old. What are some of the biggest mistakes you've seen folks make? Some maybe, I don't know, like lack of information, basically, and they're making decisions on something or some confusion they see somewhere. What are some mistakes you see happen right now that could have been maybe more easily recognized or taken care of it in a different way by just simply doing something different? Like what do you see out there right now?
Well, I think there are quite a few. I mean, as you noted, this is pretty complicated. I think first off, it's making the assumption that the prevent plant payment is going to be, easy to obtain, and it's not easy. I think the government has the viewpoint that they don't like paying growers to not plant acres. So that's why I guess they put in all these additional rules, and these rules have continued to change over time, and they change very drastically from year to year. So predominantly one of the major issues I see is that growers think that they're going to get 55% of their APH as opposed to, again, that 55% of their crop insurance guarantee. So, you know, it's a much different calculation when you're doing 55% of 200 bushels times $4 instead of 55% of your 85% guarantee. So that starts to reduce things a little bit. Secondly, when we start looking at unit structure, so you have enterprise units, and a lot of growers are using enterprise units to make their crop insurance cost less expensive. And enterprise units are based on a structure of 20 acres or 20% in two sections. So in that case, you could run into a situation where you think that you still have enterprise units, and suddenly you find out you don't have enough acres planted because these are based on planted acres. So in a case of, let's say that the insured plants 15 acres and then reports 40 acres as prevent plant in section one, and in section two, the insured plants 45 acres and reports 100 acres as PP. So the total insured acres at that point would be 200 acres times 20%. So you would need 40 acres in each of those. We need 40 acres in each of those sections to remain eligible. So since the insured didn't plant 20 acres in both sections, he doesn't meet the 20% of the insured acres. He doesn't qualify for enterprise units. So he would have to roll over to either basic units or optional units at that point.
So I want to make sure I understand this right. So enterprise unit is 20 acres or 20% of a section, right? Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then in order to have that to be eligible for a preventative plant situation, they have to plant at least 20%, and if they can't do that, then they don't qualify? Am I misunderstanding that?
That's correct. So they won't qualify for enterprise units. So it'll knock out their other acres, their planted acres that would be insured as enterprise units into something like an optional unit, which could, in cases, be double the insurance cost. So their cost could increase because of this.
So if you have a grower out there someplace that's, just say he farms, hypothetically, 5,000 acres, just for easy math, and 2,500 acres of it's underwater, and the other 2,500 acres is able to get the crop in on that other 2,500 acres. that 2,500 acres is going to be more expensive to insure than it would be otherwise?
It may be. It may be. It depends on if he's got at least two sections that have either 20% or 20% of that either 20 acres or 20% of the total insured acres. So it depends on how those 2,500 acres are structured, their unit structure is set up, which is important because if you've got areas that are, let's say, smaller fields, and those smaller fields don't meet the threshold, then either it can be knocked out into optional units, or you may not even be able to claim those acres, because again, with Prevent Plant, it's the same deal. You've got to have either 20 acres or 20% of the unit that to be prevented from planting for them to be eligible. So it could not come out of either situation.
Okay, so just so I can clarify this in my head, if I have a if I have 10 quarters, right, that I farm, and all 10 of those quarters are in a different section of ground, right? How's that? I mean, so the whole section's underwater, and except for 10% of my one section that's in each one of those areas, you know. So I've got 10 of them, 7 of them are I can't plant, but 3 of them I can, right? So basically 70% of my plantable acres I can't plant because they're flooded or whatever. Based on how their sections are set up, how does that work with those other three sections? So I guess what I'm asking is, if you had all of my acres have to equal a section in order for that to work, or how does that, I guess that's what I'm asking you, is how does that work?
So in that case, I think the way that you explained it to me, having 70% of those acres, they were, if they're in, if those other, that 30% of those acres are in multiple sections, those planted acres, then that still leaves you eligible for your enterprise unit discount. Whereas the other, that 70%, again, as long as they're in at least two or more sections, then they would be eligible for the Prevent Planting as well.
So there's really no way that, unless you just study this as a producer day in and day out, could you ever really understand what the hell you're doing?
Well, I think it's a matter of just having good communication with your crop insurance agent. Like I said, I've been on the phone with most of my growers for the last couple of weeks, and letting them know what the options are, and giving them some insight into what goes on. And then as we get closer to the final plant date, I'll have some face-to-face visits with some of my growers just to make sure that what they're planning to do, actually works, and make sure that they're still eligible.
You could literally think that you're doing the right thing, and then it could be completely wrong because of some little nuance in some part of the rule someplace.
Absolutely, because you may think that, especially if you're able to double crop bean, that you filed your Prevent Plant claim on June 6th, and you think that you're home free to plant beans, June 15th or the next chance you get to plant. And that's not true. So if you're going to go in, the rule about planting after is planting, in our case would be, June 25th, the last day of the, late plant period for corn would be the first opportunity that you would have to plant beans. So if you planted before then, that void your Prevent Plant claim on your corn.
So there's some producers out there that are going to have a really financial hardship about this whole thing because of just the rules that are preventing them to go back and plant another crop on the same ground they would probably plant the soybeans on anyway.
Absolutely. And I think making assumptions that you know the rules and that you're following the rules, that is dangerous, because that's where I would make sure to, again, stay in contact with your agent, make sure that agent's talking to a company adjuster to make sure everybody's on the same page. Because I've had questions, in multiple scenarios of, well, what if I only had 10 acres that I was going to the claim prevent plan on. Can I do that? No, it doesn't. It doesn't meet that threshold of the 20 acres or 20%. And so then, you know, growers are continue to ask, well, how can I make sure this is eligible? And so that's the key, is making sure that you're one, following the rules, two, that you're keeping documentation to document you know, your eligibility as well. Because the end of the day, what I tell most growers is plant until you can't. Just mainly because you're going to be able to take advantage of any type of price rally on the corn side, which you're not eligible to take advantage of from a prevent plant standpoint. You're more the rules are not clear as far as any of these tariff payments yet, but it is likely that they're not going to be paid on prevented acres, so you're more eligible for those payments as well. And so, and quite frankly, I think that the growers, as long as they are utilizing the insurance tools, utilizing the marketing tools, they are going to be in a better financial situation. Even if the crop doesn't look pretty, as long as it's planted, you can then look at harvest claim from that point, and that harvest claim will take the higher of the spring price or harvest price. And in this case on corn, it looks like great potential because of all these prevented acres that are out there, that the harvest price will end up being the higher of the two, maybe by a good amount.
Wow, there's a lot more to this than I thought there was going to be. So, man, this is good information, George, and I appreciate you being on the podcast. If folks wanted to reach out to you and ask you some questions, or, you know, maybe get some clarification on something, or maybe you could help them point in the right direction, what would be the best way for them to do that?
Email would be the best. It's my first name, George, at bigcrop.ag. So bigcrop.ag.
All right, George at bigcrop.ag. Right on, man. Well, George, like I said, I appreciate you being on here, and you opened my eyes to a whole bunch of stuff that I had no clue about, so I appreciate that, and I'm sure there's some folks out there listening too that now have more questions than they have answers. So,
well, thanks for having me, and anytime I can help answer some questions, or if I need to come on again and give some more clarity to a really murky subject, you're welcome. I'm welcome to do so.
Oh, man. Yeah, anytime you want to come back on, make sure you just let me know. You're always welcome. So appreciate that, George, and take care of yourself.
All right. Thank you much.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Moving Iron Podcast, now part of the Global Ag Network. If you'd like to continue any of these conversations, you can hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. You can also send me an email at Moving Iron Podcast at movingironpodcast.com. You can also visit the Moving Iron Podcast YouTube channel and watch Market Roundup with Chip Nellinger, Sean Hackett, and Angie Setzer. Also, Tax News with Glenn Birnbaum. Please visit movingironllc.com. Here you can find information, details, and updates for the 2019 Moving Iron Summit in Nashville, Tennessee. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can leave a review and subscribe at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, and globalagnetwork.com. So until next time, let's go move some iron. This is Casey Seymour. Out.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving iron.